another paper, with the psychiatric problems of the prisoners of war who will return soon to the United States are staggering. So imagine the problems which the Jews confronted when 600,000 Jews, male population, went out of Egypt. They were not people who were in slavery hundreds of years, ridiculed, humiliated, tortured, their wives dishonored, their children snatched from the motherly arms and brutally murdered. Suddenly they were liberated. Suddenly they found themselves free, independent. And the eyes of the world were focused on them. Shomamim Yergozim, Chirochas Yeshifloshes, Rodeval Laluf Eri, Elamei Evachazim Orat. Many slaves, former slaves, did not know how to live a free life. Nightmares pursued them. Memories frightened them. Each knock in the door at night reminded them of blood-chilling scenes. The people were completely dislocated, confused, frightened. They needed somebody to lead, to teach. And particularly, somebody in whom they could confide. They clung to Moshe. Never mind, Justitia Civilis. They wanted to be in his company. His mere presence was inspiring. His voice was assuring and calming. His words of wisdom enlightened them. His words of comfort and solace placated their pent-up, perplexed emotions, healed their sins, and infused them with hope and trust. Vayeshev Meshe Lishpot Esom. Vayam Odom Al Meshe Minabeker Ad Erev. Why did the people stand about Moses from the morning until the evening? Certainly not in any official capacity. Not because Moshe assumed the role of the ruler and chief justice, and he required of the people that they stand in his presence. As they do it, I mean, when the judge walks in into the courtroom and says, well, what is the announcement by the clerk of the court? I don't remember. Rise! There was no clerk who announced rise when Moshe came in. Certainly that not because Moshe required the people that they stand in his presence. They stood about him because they loved him. They were fascinated by him because they could not be separated from him. The standing was not of a ceremonial nature at all. It was spontaneous, natural, I would say instinctual. They simply couldn't leave him. In Moshe's presence, they felt differently. They forgot the Nixim and the Shetrim and the crying of the children who were snatched away from the mothers. They forgot all the humiliation, all the oppression, all the evil which was inflicted on them. In Moshe's presence. He had a cathartic effect upon them. Yisro misunderstood all that. He could not imagine a justice teacher. He could not understand a justice friend. He could not understand Moshe, who was at the same time teacher, leader, friend, and judge. To whom the people clung. And whom they didn't want to leave alone. He thought that Moshe plays the role of a stern ruler, mighty king in whose presence no one is allowed to sit. Yethro thought that the people stand because they were instructed to do so, because the protocol demanded. That's why he rebuked Moses. In the filter, Rashi says that he reprimanded him for sitting while the people stand. And he said, Vayar Chesel Meshe, Eskol Asher Uesel Ohom. Madua, Alto Yeshiv Oladecho Vecholom Nitzav Olecho, Min Beker Ad Erev. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that, that he did to the people, that he did to the people, as if he were a gentle ruler, he said, what is the thing that thou dost to the people? Or why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand near thee, from morning unto evening? Rashi remarks, the name of the Mechilta, he was sitting like a king. Yisrael saw him sitting like a king. In Yisrael's imagination, Moses sat like a king. Really, he did not sit like a king. And they all stood, and the thing was distasteful to Yisrael, in that he made light of the respect due to Israel. Therefore, he reprimanded him. Yeshiv Kemelech, Vecholom Eindim, Viukshe Adoval Yisrael, Shemizalvel Moshe, Shemizalvel, Vechvedom Shal Yisrael. He was disrespectful to the people whom he saved, and he redeemed, and he took out of Egypt. The standing, you know very well that Yisrael was wrong from A to Z. The standing was not ordered, but spontaneous. Simply, there was no sitting room. The people stood in order to be close to their great teacher and friend, in order to be able to touch him, at least to touch the corner of his garment. Not Kimelech, not like a friend. Interesting is that while the Bible uses the term Eimdim, or the Cholom Eimed, Almei Shemi Beker Adarev, to describe the scene which Yisro misunderstood, another term was employed by Yisro in his rebuke addressed to Moses, namely Nitzavim, the Cholom Nitzav Alechom Beker Adarev. When the Torah describes the facts, the situation, the Torah uses the term Eimed. Vayamidon al Meshe mebeker ha'erev. When Yisrael rebuked Meshe, he employed the term Nitzav. What's the difference between Eimed and Nitzav, semantically? Of course, there are two synonyms to Shemes and Zophim, but there is a difference, a distinction. The difference between Eimed and Nitzav is obvious. The verb Eimed describes just a physical posture in contradistinction to another physical posture, namely Yeshiva. Vayeshev Meshe Lishpot Pekom is physical posture over that of Yeshiva, while the whole Eimed, all of the people crowded about him, around him, and they stood around him. The term, the verb Nitzavim, has another connotation. Nitzavim refers to standing not as a physical posture, but as a sign of subordination, of preparedness to serve, to implement the orders, of being ready. If you are ready, you stand straight. Let attention. Vayikv leYochal Yosef leYisapek leChel anitzavim olav. Vayikv leYosef bekol itzio kolush polish me'oloi. The term nitzavim is concerned not with the physical posture, but with the fact that Joseph was master, and the others who were present were his subordinates. That's why he ordered them to leave the house. That was the mistake of Yisrael's part. He thought the people are Nitzavim, that it is protocol. Meshe, the mighty ruler, wants his servants to stand at attention. They were ordered to do so. They were instructed to do so. So he felt, Yisrael felt it was wrong on Meshe's part. He rebuked him. But all this took place in Yisrael's imagination. All this was not a reality. Meshe never instructed anybody The people did refuse to leave Leisure. They didn't want to depart. They want to come as close as possible. Somehow his presence had a redemptive, cathartic, therapeutic influence upon them. His presence, his voice, his personality healed the seasons and placated their minds. As a matter of fact, Moses answered Yisro and explained to him what the Jew understand about your fate. Not just not judge, but to be together, to help, to give friendship, to give love, to be concerned, to be involved, and so forth and so on. Moses answered Yisro and explained to him his role. Both Rashi and Nachmanides and Ramban agree that Moshe told Yisro about the threefold task he performs within the community, and that what we call shofet is not restricted to judging, but extends to the whole complex of human relations. Moses broke down his relationship with the people into three component parts, according to Rashi and the Ramban. First, ki yovei elai om livrei shesro lekim, because the people come to me to inquire of God. Second, ki yilem dovor bo elai vishafadeti ben ish ubein reyu. Second, when they have a matter, they come to me and I judge between one and another. Third, vidaiti lohem as huki alekim vesteresov, I do make them know the statutes of God and his doctrines. The Ramban holds the view that the sentence ki yove elai vidresh alekim refers to prayer. The people in time of distress, please, and crisis, come to me with the request that I should intercede with the Almighty on their behalf. This is the job of whom? To pray is the job of whom? Of a friend. Of one who shares in the travails and the distress and the agony and the misery of the sick person, or of the person who is confronted with crisis, or of the person who was struck suddenly, unexpectedly, by disaster. Only a friend can pray. A stranger who is indifferent to the suffering of a fellow man has no right to pray. Chazal expressed himself beautifully. Vitzor sheyach le'olov. He should share in the sickness, in the illness. Moshe said, Yisro, you just told me I sit like a king, and the protocol requires that they stand in my presence. Well, it is just, I mean, it's your imagination, I mean, has fabricated such a story. I am, first they look upon me as a friend, as an equal of theirs. They know I'm close to God. They come to me with their troubles, and they confide in me, and ask me to pray to God and to help them. Secondly, you are right. I'm also a judge. But there's not much to do about being a judge here. He heal and double. It happens sometimes in a heavy matter. Matter means controversy. Problem of litigation. Boy, lie. Of course, we should authority. But when I judge the people, it's not the way I used to observe you judging your Midianites. In the court of Midian, one is wrong, the other one is right. One is wicked, the other one is righteous. In the court of Midian, one used to be hurt, badly hurt. The other one used to rejoice in the downfall of his opponent. In my court, they show fatity, beinish, ubein reyu, then they leave. The Abichilte says, keshenifterim yolai, when they bid goodbye, farewell to me, niftorim kerein, they walk out of my court. of the halls of just, of divine justice, not justitia civilis, as friends. And finally, Vedaite Yeshukei Elikim Vesteresov, Moshe was the great teacher par excellence, who instructed the Bnei Yisrael in the divine law and doctrines. Moshe, in other words, who was friend, who shared in the travail and joys of the people. He was leader who administered not ruthless justitia civilis, but divine righteousness tempered with love and grace. Mishpat Zdoko, Mishpat Sholem, Ben Ishu Ben Reu, Ze Adin Sheish Bepshoro. I'm now reading the text. Sheshneim Niftorim Zeim Ze. Kereim. Moshe hinted to Yisro that he prefers a verdict based on compromise rather than based on strict laws. For in a case of a pshore decision, the party's friends, and finally Meshe told him that he is the teacher, and Meshe indeed was the great teacher and educator par excellence, who taught not only his generation, but he is still teaching Jews throughout the generations. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, this means lishpeteron, to be a friend, to promote charity, caritas justitia, mishpat zdoka, to further peace and friendship between among the people, and to be the teacher who shaped the elected community into a great nation, into Ama Nifchor. Now let me just close with the following thought. Vayameidu omal meshe min beker ado erev. There is a strange mechilte, a strange and incomprehensible gemore in Sanhedrin, and of course Rashi quotes the mechilte and the gemore, and the ipso facto, Rashi is strange and enigmatic. Efshar leimar kein, is it really possible to say that Moses said the whole day long? Rashi, in all night raise the question. Ela, kol dayon shedon dinemes lamidei. Any judge who gives a rightful decision, as truth demands it, afil shoachas, even though he spent but 1 hour on it, malol rakosuf kilueisif batero kolayin. So the scripture accounts it to him as though he had occupied himself with the study of Torah the whole day long. One answer. There's another answer. The tzilonase shutof lakodish bochu the maise breshis shenema bevayi ere vayi veker vimechot. And as though he became co-partner with the Almighty in the work of creation of which it is stated in Genesis, it was evening, it was morning, one day, and perhaps a unique day. Interestingly, the Medrash Shrabe says, Vayere vayveka yemechot ze yemakipur. The Medrash Shrabe, not Medrash Priya, Medrash Shrabe. It was evening, and it was morning, one day, this is Yom Kippur. Why? Because apparently Echot is interpreted by the Medrash as being unique, singular, not just one day. The one day. Rashi quotes the Mechilta. However, in our text, the Mechilta, the first answer, the dying spend an hour in administering justice, true justice, in the scripture accounts, to him as if he had studied the Torah the whole day long. I mean, that we don't find in the Chilta. Nor do you find it in the Gemara Sanhedrin. However, what Rashi quotes about, probably this text had it. What Rashi is trying to put across, the message which Rashi is trying to put across, is a twofold one. First, the judging, as we said before, and teaching are identical acts. He says, a dayan who spends 1 hour on administering justice. So, the scripture, a person, accounts to him as if he had what? Studied the law the whole day. It means studying the law and meting out justice are identical acts. Moreover, because the way I explained it, to judge means to teach. To judge means to educate. To judge means to write. Otherwise, all the institution of shy would crumble and collapse. Yeah. Moreover, the impact of instruction through handling a case properly and through delivering a true and fair verdict is by far greater than theoretical teaching. Of course, but I would subscribe to it. Of course, teaching by deed, by example, is always more impressive and more effectual than teaching by the word. That is exactly what Rashi had in mind. An hour of true, honest judging is as productive and significant as a full day's study just by mouth. Very simple. However, apparently Rashi was not too happy with that yet. Rashi wants us to understand this equation of judging and teaching. It's an equation, and I explained before. To judge means to enlighten. To judge means to teach. To judge means to instruct. But however, there is one question which should be asked. To teach what? To instruct in what? To enlighten how? What do the litigants learn if they appear before Moshe? And Moshe tells them to obey their claims and to ask for a verdict based on Mishpat Tzedakah or Mishpat Shalem. What do they learn? What outlook on life do they learn from Moses by appearing before him? And Rashi answers, not Rashi, it's the Mechilta. What they learn is the idea of Baker and Erev. It's a very mysterious answer. What does it mean? You wouldn't guess it. So that's why it's futile to try. The Ibn Ezra, as well as the Ramban and Kimchi, I quote all of them because it's a very important problem and of semantics, explained in Bereshis Bo that the term Erev is derived from Orev, Arev, to mix or to confuse. Taruvis, Rabbonim Nova Taruvis, it's just Taruvis. And Baker is derived from Bakir, Leivakir Ben Tev Loro, discriminate, distinguish. I'll read. Erev writes Ibn Ezra, Korev Mitam Cheshach, is close to the word of Cheshach. The Nitrokach is called Erev, because it's dark. Shenisavu Atzures Bay. Images are mixed up, intermingled. You cannot distinguish between Ruben and Shimon. It's very interesting and would support the opinion of Ezra. It's a philological opinion, it's a question of semantics, that the time of mourning for reading Shema, Mishiyaker es Chaveri HaKorev El Avdal Adames. The very moment you can identify a face, a countenance, it's mourning. What does evening mean? The impossibility to identify even a close friend of yours. The Ramban writes, "V'yikro tchilas alaylo arv erev be'avu sheyisarvu be'yatzures." And the beginning of the night is called erev because the tzures are confused. The images are confused. V'tchilas ayim beker sheyivakir odom b'neisom, and men can discriminate, distinguish between one identity and another identity. Any mentions Kipirush Rebbe Avraham, the way Rebbe Avraham explained. Timchi expresses himself in identical fashion, but a little more is more elaborate. Reis Acha Bias Hashemes, the time which follows sunset, Nikro Erev is called Erev, Loshin Irbuf. There is confusion, perplexity. The Ishabrus Advorim, things merge into one mass. I can tell you now I have very poor eyesight and I'm driven, I don't drive. At night I get frightened because I don't see the road, I don't see the streets, I get the glare of lights and everything merges into one dark mass. The trilas, yes. Mipnei shueis acheshech, it's the time of darkness. V'yisarvu advarim, things are mingled, intermingled. Shleyakir odom, men cannot identify. V'leyafrid bin dover ledover, he cannot discriminate between two identities. Mipnei imbi. Beiker, he writes, Kimchi. Kimchi was a great authority, medieval authority, on semantics and grammar. The great grammarian. Beiker tchilas ayim. Yikor beiker, loshin drishe, research, understanding, ubikeres, criticism, discrimination, distinction, kibat baker, in the morning, yizbaker koldova. Everything is identified, leir hayim, in the light of the day. There are apparently two streaks in beings. I say being as a whole. That of rationality and that of mystery. Reality, call it nature, I don't care, is both intelligible. Reality is very intelligible. Creation is intelligible and at the same time constitutes a mysterium magnum, never to be unraveled. The simplicity of the mathematical equation which answers the question of how the universe functions, and the philosophical and metaphysical insoluble mystery as regards the question of why the universe functions or what is the universe, are characteristic of being as such. Aristotle denied the possibility that two contradictory statements, two mutually exclusive tenets, can coexist. They do exist in nature itself. That's his great mistake. Nature, on one hand, is intelligible. On the other hand, it's a closed book. At times, nature is very cooperative, smilingly opening up to us recesses, allowing us to climb to the stars, and in motherly fashion reveals to us her secrets, and at the same time, nature is tough, refuses to recognize our presence, is closed up, defying man's aspirations, letting him confront the mysterium magnum in fear and in trembling. Sometimes nature is very, very stubborn And sometimes nature is very perforated. As a matter of fact, I said it many times, as far as mechanical sciences are concerned, the mathematical exact sciences are concerned, which deals with inorganic matter, dead matter, still matter, nature is very gracious, was very gracious to me. Because physical sciences have reached, I mean, great heights, unimagined heights. I mean, the fact that we have climbed to the moon, affirms it. You see, but organic nature, the cell, as a normal and also as abnormal. Matter is close to us for the time being. We have achieved very little in biology and physiology, very little in biochemistry. All right, we made great progress lately, but to compare what we know about behavior of inorganic matter, about electricity and magnetism and motion and hydrodynamics and so forth on, with what we know about biology, about the cell, about life, about the biochemical behavior of organic matter, would be a folly. We know almost nothing. Everything is played up, everything is printed in Times on the front page, but we know nothing. And the best proof is, I said it many times, that a man who can climb to the moon cannot defy a malignant cell in the organism. Malignant cell in the organism, nature cannot heal, cannot restore normality. It can, the surgeon cuts out, yes, but this is not healing. This is just cutting out, crippling, mutilating. To heal, there is a long, long, long road to travel. And who knows whether we ever know that. Nature is sometimes very cooperative like a mother, and sometimes very cruel, letting men confront the mysterious magnum is here and traveling. Being, as such, contains both Erev, the way the Ibn Ezra, the way Kimchi, the way the Ramban explained, confusion, and Baker, clarity. A mix-up, Taruves Atzures, as well as distinctiveness, Bikeres, discrimination. Progress, which defies the imagination, and humiliating stagnation and immobility on the part of man in quest for the truth. And this dual streak in reality is applicable not only to the scientific gesture, to the cognitive scientific gesture, but to the private human existential experience as well. The human existence in time is not a uniform one. It is split into parts, in two dimensions. One is called Baker, the other one is called Erev. Vayi Erev, Vayi Baker, Yei Mechot. This is the day of man, the human day. How long this day is, doesn't matter. Sometimes it's 50, 60, 70 years. And sometimes it reaches 90. Very seldom as it happens. But it's just a day. Man lives the day. Means you'll die. Doesn't mean today. It means at the end of your day. How long it will last, a different story. What's your life? And the day of man, the Yemechod of man, it consists of Erev and Baker. It consists of understanding and discriminating. When the existential awareness is a rational one, the ontological experience is saturated with joy and happiness. It is Baker. We live, we exist, and it seems to us that we also at times during the Baker period, and it seems to us that we also comprehend the meaning of our living and existing in time, that somehow we fulfill ourselves during that day. We sometimes have the feeling. I have lost it long ago. But you are, perhaps you are younger than I am. Perhaps you still have it. It's a blessed feeling. It is the Baker. We are cognizant at that period. We are cognizant of our continuous growth, of our continuous progress, intellectual as well as emotional, with the passage of time. What we did not know yesterday, this is the optimistic approach of the scientist. What we did not know yesterday, yesteryear, or yesterday, we know today. It is true. And what appears to us puzzling and enigmatic today, now, will be clear and simple the next day, a little later. We feel that we move with time toward greater goals and more enchanting and fascinating horizons. Some people feel it. As a matter of fact, some Israelis, not all of them, many fake, but some Israelis have this feeling. They live in the period of Baker. Somewhere there is meaning. There is, what shall I say, there is a goal. And next year will be better than this year. And 2 years from now will be much better. This is a period. This is, I would say, existentially, a justified experience. If not for that experience, man would still be in the cave or in the jungle. The boldness of man, his quest, his drive forward, his courage to climb, to the stars, to at least reach out for the stars, is a result of a Yiveka, of that sound, sane, and courageous feeling that that God told me, Udubar Tzvichevshua, rule the land, you rule the universe, and conquer it. And as I said, this feeling, this existential experience has been sanctioned by God. Not only sanctioned, but man was in clutch. Perhaps it is mandatory on the part of man to do so. We have never preached quietism the way Christian mystics did. Never quietism. We are active. We are bold. We are moving. And so forth. Time, from that viewpoint, from that point of frontage, means enlightenment, progress. Baker equals Baker, knowing, discriminating, progressing. The morning is bright and so beautiful, and during the Baker period, man is victor. He is proud and strong. However, there is another part to the existential day of man. The day of man consists of Baker and Eric. When the existential awareness turns into existential confusion and non-understanding. When the ontological consciousness mocks at itself. When man begins to mock itself. When he begins to ridicule himself. The man becomes a masochist, tortures himself, denies himself, and downgrades himself. When the ontological consciousness mocks, acts, and denies itself, contradictions show up in the period of the Erev, problems appear wherever a while ago harmony prevailed. What was united before lies now in debris. Everything seems topsy-turvy, upside down. There is no integrity. Living means just to pick up debris, fragments of a being which was and isn't anymore. Debris of a shattered existence. Events happen seemingly, because according to our finite mind, without any rationale. The whole act of living becomes, if I may use a existential term, a very ugly affair. You ask why and what, and you find no answer. This kind of an existence, which was before, a while ago, so beautifully defined, by the Pirkei Avos of it. It's very strange. We have never noticed it, how beautifully, I believe, no existentialist since Augustine, Pascal, and the mother have ever expressed the paradox of living in such a wonderful way as our Tanya in Pirkei Avos. I don't remember who the Tanya is. What did he say? Existence in the period of Erev is an unwanted, compulsory living from which man paradoxically is liberated by an unwanted, compulsory death. Exactly. But if you say it in Hebrew, I mean, you don't pay attention to it. But try to translate it in existential terms. The existence is unwanted. Living is a compulsory performance. I do it under coercion. So I should expect death. I should welcome death. Oh no. From this experience you'll be liberated. But by what? By death, which is both unwanted and compulsory. Yehadus taught man to accept both the Erev and the Baker, dimensions of our existential experience, to be bold in the morning and humble in the evening, to be grateful for the morning and to be faithful when everything is orderly and neatly arranged, and to be faithful at the evening when everything is in utter confusion and disorder. Man is victor, conqueror in the morning. In the morning he is critic, expert, scientist, ruler. He likes this role, of course. However, he should also learn to like the role in reverse. When man is defeated by nature, then he is neither critic, since he cannot discriminate, nor is he ruler, nor is he expert, since he is perplexed, nor is he ruler, because he is the weakest living being in the universe. Man who was defeated is the motto of Erev. And this cry must be heard by man. The Dayan who renders the true decision, the Pshara decision. What is Mishpat Doko or Mishpat Shorim teaches the litigants who are seeking victory, the baker, how to give up and how to give away and how to accept defeat and be satisfied with it. Lagit Babeka Chazdecho, Reminat Shalom.